Thank you for downloading this episode of Folk on Foot. Before we start, I just wanted to share a brief message. If you like what we do, we really need your support to keep going. You can join our wonderful band of members and you'll get great rewards. These include access to our amazing Folk on Foot on Film archive of hundreds of songs shot on location on our travels around the UK and Ireland. To sign up, just go to folkonfoot.com/support us. You'll also get an ad-free version of all our episodes and an email postcard from me each time we go on a walk. If you just want the ad-free version, it'll cost you £3 a month, and you can get it through your Apple Podcast app or at folkonfoot.com/support us. Finally, if you don't want to make a regular commitment but do want to show how much you love us, you can simply buy us a coffee. You can also do that at folkonfoot.com/support us. Every penny we get goes back into making more episodes of Folk on Foot. So thank you and enjoy the walk.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
One of the most beautiful albums I've heard recently was The Eternal Rocks Beneath by Catherine Priddy. And I think I'm right in saying it's the only debut album to have gone to number one in the official folk albums chart. And it is just a beautiful piece of songwriting and performance. And we're delighted that today we're going to be walking with Catherine, starting in the village of Alverchurch in Worcestershire and ending up in Tanworth in Arden in Warwickshire, which is where Nick Drake is buried. And Catherine is going to reveal to us the details of a project that involves her recording a Nick Drake song. But there's much more to her story than that. And we'll hear it all in this walk. Catherine, good morning.
Hello, how are you?
I'm all right, lovely to see you. Where have you brought us to?
You're on the Alverchurch Canal, which is where I've grown up, not on the canal, but just next to it. And I've always walked along here and always fancied a canal boat of my own one day.
Yeah, because there's a couple of rather nice-looking barges here, aren't there?
Yeah.
One of them's a bit dilapidated, but so the other one further on looks very inviting.
There are some very inviting ones, but no, if you keep walking along here, eventually you'll get to Birmingham.
And Alverchurch is what kind of place? What kind of village was it to grow up in?
Lovely. I realise it, because it's quite quiet and sleepy, but you've got access to Birmingham, as you know, having just got on the train from Birmingham. It's easy to get into the city, but when you're out here, it's just nice and peaceful.
It is absolutely peaceful, isn't it?
Nice place to grow up.
And tell us about your start in music. Do you come from a musical family?
I wouldn't say a musical family per se. I'm the only musician. My brother played. We both were brought up listening to a lot of music. There was always a record on. which I suppose is a big help.
What sort of record?
Everything. So anything from classical to Frank Zappa to death metal to folk music, like everything. So that we were always listening to music. And my dad always left the guitar in arm's reach, I think with the hope that one day I might pick it up, which I did. I played it upside down for a while because I didn't...
Upside down?
Yeah, I didn't know which way you were supposed to hold it. So I taught myself the wrong way up and then...
And did your dad play?
He does play, yeah. He plays a little bit.
So did he teach you at first?
No, I taught myself and he watched on encouragingly. They've always been encouraged from a distance, parents, which is really nice. They've always been really supportive, which I feel very grateful for.
So, and were the things that you particularly fixated on amongst that eclectic mix of music, were the things that stood out for you when you were younger?
Yeah, I think I've always liked lyrics, and I think when I was younger, particularly the folk music stuff, really interested me in terms of the stories. I remember that I was absolutely terrified of a Steely Span song. Is it Long Lankin?
Oh, yes.
And I remember things like that really... I don't know if that stuck out in a good way, but I remember that absolutely terrifying me when I was younger. And I think... I think the lyrics always stood out. But that was a lot of, in the prog stuff that my dad would listen to. It was all very lyric-led. So I enjoyed all
that. So the power of the storytelling and the imagery were what attracted you?
I think so. And I think that is probably what led me to folk music in the end, was all the stories. And I think even if my songs aren't always kind of folky folk, I think they'll always have that storytellingness.
Yeah. And did you, when you first started out, did you try to play folk songs or did you try to play songs by other people?
I just played anything, to be honest. So when I started, I just started playing songs I'd heard on the radio. And then I got myself a little Irish guitar songbook, which is where I learnt to finger pick. And then I started writing my own bits and pieces. So
what age were you when you first wrote a song?
14, maybe. I think there were some songs on the first album which were when I was really young.
Really?
Yeah.
So you songs that you'd written when you were a teenager?
Yeah.
Right. Because sometimes when you look back on songs you've written when you were a teenager, you're a bit embarrassed. But you had some... But listening to the album, you obviously had some amazing talent at that age.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I just enjoy doing it. But no, there's some... I think Indigo, which turned out to be the lead single, was one of the earliest songs I wrote.
Would you sing that later for us?
Yes. And that's the hill I'm going to take you up to.
Quite busy this morning, isn't it?
That's what I'm saying, yeah. This bit does get really busy.
Lots
with dog
of joggers
walkers.
And dog walkers.
Where
and...
I'm going to take you should be really quiet because it's in the fields.
You were started to write, and you said the lyrics are really important, and obviously, listening to your music, there's a lot of poetic imagery. Were you reading poetry as well when you were a teenager?
Yeah, I was doing a lot of reading. I come from a long line of book lovers. My grandpa was a book trader. And my mum always worked in the book trade as well. So,
Morning.
So there's always been a lot of books, and I read a lot as a kid, and I went and studied literature at uni.
So who were the favourite authors when you were a teenager?
When I was a teenager, I loved Mallory Blackman. When I was younger, I loved Michael Morpurgo. But I really liked all the classics as well. I think Jane Eyre was the first book I read that really got me into kind of literature. I got really excited about that book. But to be honest, when I was younger, it was just anything I could get my hands on. I was little Matilda, just racing through them.
And Eternal Rocks Beneath is a quote, isn't it? That's the name of your album.
It is, yes. It's a quote from Wuthering Heights, which is my favourite book. And she describes Heathcliff as like the eternal rocks beneath, of little visible delight but necessary. That's her love. I thought that was such a nice description. And it felt like a good name for a debut album that kind of is the first thing, and it's going to be the baseline, it's the bedrock for everything else.
So we've actually stopped now outside a pub called the Crown Inn, just by the canal.
Yeah.
And this is a great place for a song. What would you like to sing for us?
Well, I thought I would sing, since we were talking a little bit about Wuthering Heights, I thought I would sing Wolf, which is the title track from the debut EP, which I think came out in 2018. I wrote that kind of inspired by The Catcher of Heathcliff. I was doing my A-levels at the time, and it's the first time I'd read Wuthering Heights, and I was just so taken with the whole book and the world, so it was inspired by that.
My love, he chases moonlight over heath and over heather, overthrows the starlight as he hails the stormy weather. Eyes are like two pools of ink into which I seem to drown. Why is it I love him when his only pleasure's pulling me back down? Shiver in his stone embrace and watch the daylight dawning. When he leaves, his shadow stains the hollow he has made. No, he is the devil's own, but oh my God, I only wish he'd stayed. Oh, won't you stay? Devil man, I beg, be kind. Your words, they fall like ashes, and they're born inside my mind. On my mind. My wolf is made of rocks, and now I need him to be stable. His arms, they may be cold and hard, but they hold me like a cradle. Know that if I go with him, my soul he'll surely take. Beastie is an ocean, and I know I am the rocks on which he'll break. And he breaks. I break, 'cause I know I'll love you, that you're everything I hate, and I've lost my heart to darkness, and I know that it's too
Catherine, that's a beautiful song, and it's got a slightly wacky video.
It has got a slightly wacky video, yes.
Tell us about what happens in the video.
We hired out an old kind of industrial space in Digbeth in Birmingham, and we thought it would be really fun to go and smash up some china and stuff. So I borrowed a baseball bat off my mum's friends, and we got a load of china from a charity shop. We just had a brilliant afternoon smashing it up in slow motion.
It looked incredibly therapeutic.
Incredibly therapeutic. I think you can pay to go into spaces to do this now. I think there's smash rooms or something where you can go and pay to smash things. But yeah, I recommend it.
Yeah, it was wonderful. I mean, actually, there's very little relevance to the song in a way.
Yeah, kind of. It was more just, because the song's more about being in a kind of love-hate relationship and all the kind of frustration that comes with that. So I guess that's partly why I wanted to do it. But equally, we kind of wanted to do it just to surprise people. Because I think, again, I've always been quite keen not to get too sucked into kind of folky stereotypes and things. And so we thought, well, what people expect is me walking through the woods with my guitar, kind of gently strumming my guitar in a cornfield or something. But what they don't expect is me smashing china in Digbeth. So that's what we...
Well, it had the desired effect on me, because when I first saw it, I was like, well, this is completely different from anything I've ever seen before.
Yeah, it
was very memorable. And then, of course, I went back to watch it again to listen to the song properly, having watched the images rather than listen to the song. So it was beautiful.
Well, there you go. Thank you very much. Yeah. No, I recommend it. If you're ever feeling pent up, go and get yourself
a
baseball
bat. Yeah.
We had a lot of YouTube comments of people going, where are your safety goggles? I would like to say I was wearing safety goggles. We just did some clever cut shots where you couldn't see the goggles.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, goggles
very
well
glad
worn
to hear it
at all times.
So we're going to walk into the village now and through the other side. But is it a historic village?
The central bit is. Obviously, this bit's quite new. But yeah, so the bit where I grew up in is right in the middle, where all the houses are very old and some Tudor buildings and things. My house has a long history. I think it was a sweet shop once. I think someone was hanged in the house once. I think
hanged in the house?
Yeah, I think so.
What, as a punishment?
I've no idea.
And do you feel any kind of spirit when you're in there?
No, I don't think so. I think I've lived in there too long. Maybe they're bored of me. I don't think they visit me anymore.
That's a bit spooky, isn't it? Having someone actually hanged in your house.
A little bit.
So just to go back to your story then, you're a teenager, you've taken up the guitar,
yeah.
You're starting to write songs.
Yeah.
Did you start to perform when you were in your teens as well?
A little bit. In our church, in this village, there was a folk club and I started playing there very reluctantly. I was really shy about it, but they were really encouraging. And I did a music GCSE which required you to do a performance, so I had to play a song just between me and the teacher then. But I was really, really shy about it for a really, really long time.
Why was that?
I don't know, I just didn't think I was any good. I think it was classic teenage angst. I thought I was a bit rubbish. And then the school encouraged me to sign up to this competition that was run by the Brits called the Next Brit Thing. And to my horror, I kept getting through and I kept passing to the next stage of the competition. It's ridiculously, my first actual performance outside my village was at the O2 in London in front of McFly.
Really?
They were judging.
That is extraordinary.
So I wandered on stage and sang one of my own songs.
What did that feel like?
Terrifying. But it was what the funny thing is, my hands had always shaken uncontrollably when I was performing. And I'd always had to sit down because my knees would shake so much. That was the first time ever that my hands didn't shake. And I think it just almost scared me so much that...
You went over the other side.
Yeah, my hands haven't really shaken since. So.
Oh, that's cured you. So yeah. Was there a huge audience in there?
Fairly. I mean, a lot of it was... My school brought down a little minibus of pupils from the music department to come and watch. I remember my head teacher shoving a camera at me through the door to try and get a video of me with McFly. It was very surreal, very odd.
Yeah. And so did you actually win that competition?
No, I was a runner-up.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well,
yeah,
what a baptism of fire to start like that.
Funny
and you said you
start.
Played at the folk club here in the village.
Yes.
What sort of people were playing the folk club
just
at that time?
Local people from the village. From
right, sort of open mic night type
thing.
Pretty much.
I think it was called Acoustic Roots. I think they still do it, actually. We'll just cross here.
Okay. And I think you played alongside some other people from the folk world, didn't you?
Yes, well, Early Doors.
Yeah,
so over the years I've played with Vashti Bunyan, which was really exciting because she doesn't really perform anymore. I think that was a bit of a one-off show and I supported her there. I think Michael Chapman was my first... support slot, then Richard Thompson. I've done quite a lot with him since.
These are pretty amazing
bands.
Now we're stepping away from the village a little bit and down a small road towards a beautiful wooded hill.
Yes.
What's that hill?
That is Newbourne Hill, and it's on the way to Rowney Green, which is the neighbouring village. And that's where, growing up, my best friend lived in Rowney Green, so. Just always been around here. We were either walking the dogs. This hill specifically also became, that's where people would go for, you know, sneaky snog or a sneaky smoke or something when we were a little bit older. And it was the setting for Indigo, which was the lead single from my first album. So I figured that would be
wonderful to hear that sung in the place
nice
that inspired
place
it.
Yeah.
But are you a big walker yourself?
Yeah, I love walking. As a kid, I was obsessed with insects and birds, and I still am. I really like going out and spotting wildlife. It's my favourite way to spend a day, really, is doing a big hike somewhere.
What sort of hikes have you done then?
Well, I'm currently doing Offa's Dyke with my dad, which is one of the, I think it's 177 miles. It's the old border of England and Wales. And you're supposed to do it on consecutive days, but me and my dad are doing it as like a little walking challenge thing where we're doing 12 miles and then starting again where we left off. So you're ticking that off together.
So you're not at all daunted by a 12-mile hike?
No. It's a good challenge.
We're just coming up towards quite a big road, but we're going to go across that and up the hill, aren't we?
We're going to go underneath and then carry on into the fields, yeah. But that's the only problem in our church, is you are surrounded, you've got the motorway really close by, so you can never really escape that.
Yeah, so what is it about walking that really gets under your skin? What is it that you love so much about it?
It just clears my head completely. I think when I'm walking around, it makes me feel relaxed. I like the fact that it's a slow activity, so you're taking in everything as you go. And it's just a really nice way to see the country. I think we're really, really, really lucky in the UK to have so many footpaths and places that we can walk.
Two horses coming towards us now. And with riders.
Yeah, we go to one side.
We better let them go past.
You wouldn't want to tangle with them, would you? They're a lot bigger than us.
I'm quite scared of horses, I've got to be honest. I don't mind them on the other side of a fence, but...
They seemed well under control.
They were very well.
They were well under control.
No, that's fine.
And we're actually going under the road now, so you'll notice that the sound changes and you get this wonderful echo from the tunnel as we pass under the main road.
I've always had a music video idea that I want to do on a canal boat, going through a really long tunnel like that.
With the lights? You need lights, wouldn't you?
Candles going underneath one of the old long... There's a really long canal bridge between Alvechurch and Tardybig. And I've always fancied going through there on a boat and recording something that lasts for the length of the tunnel.
Well, that's a wonderful idea. It might take... Yeah. If you have to do several takes, it could be a bit cumbersome, couldn't it?
It could be a little bit. A lot of reversing. Probably have to find someone to punt the boat as well, because I reckon the motor would be
too much loud. Noise from the motor. Yeah, so you'd have someone punting.
No, possibly.
God, we'd have a crew of thousands on this one.
No. I'm hoping there might be some lambs. I don't know if it's going to be too early for lambs.
Well, it's March now, isn't it? So sometimes they should be coming soon.
Sometimes.
So we're talking about how you started performing.
Yeah. I was doing open mics for a while, and I was really lucky to meet my manager, John Fell, and he always said, go off, go to uni, go and do whatever it is you need to do, go and do some travelling, get it all done. He said, but at some point you've got to come back and record an album, and then we'll see what happens. So that's what I did.
And were you still writing during that time at uni?
Yeah, on and off. Well, I could, because I was studying literature, so the more you're reading, the more you write sometimes, so that was all really helpful.
And is the songwriting process a struggle for you, or is it just something that flows out of you?
I'd love to say that I've got a really great songwriting process, but I don't. Sometimes I'll go for ages and feel like I can't do anything, and then when a song does happen, it tends to happen really quickly. I think I wrote Wolf in about 5 minutes in the end, even though I'd been playing around with the idea for ages, and then it suddenly all just happened.
So does it mull around in your head?
Yeah, a little bit. I have loads and loads of notes, of fragments of lyrics, and I've got lots and lots of little guitar riffs. And then it's just the process of trying to match up the right one. So I don't really have a definite process, but that's something I really want to work on. I think I just need to start sitting down more regularly with just writing something, whether it's bad or good, just exercising that muscle a bit more.
And when you look at the lyrics, are you hoping that they could stand alone without the music, that they are, in effect, poetry?
Yeah. The lyrics are just the most important bit for me, so I always want that to feel like something special in itself, because it's definitely the thing I always look for when I'm finding music I like, is the lyrics.
Now we're climbing up a hill now, which is why I'm a bit out of breath. Let's get through this gate. Someone coming.
He's doing laps.
This is so impressive. A man has just run down the hill towards us, and now he's running back up again.
I think he's done that 3 times while we were walking up there as well. I'm sure he's training.
Let's just take it steady, Catherine, shall we? No, we don't have to...
Please don't start running.
We don't have to try and compete, yeah, do we? So you've got all these songs together.
Yeah.
How did they eventually become The Eternal Rocks Beneath?
Well, it was a bit of a here, there and everywhere process, because I hadn't been in a studio before. And like I said, I was kind of finishing off uni, and it was done in fragments over a couple of years, alongside the EP, which came out in 2018, and we thought we'd put the EP out as an experiment, and I didn't really have any expectations, and then the EP did quite well.
Very well, in fact. It was rapturously received, I think it's fair to say.
Partly thanks to a certain Mr. Thompson, I think.
Richard Thompson said it was the best thing he'd heard all year in Mojo magazine, didn't he?
He did, and I still don't know how he got a copy, but I'm very grateful. So after that we thought, okay, let's do a full shebang.
So yeah, how did you find learning the recording process?
A bit tricky in parts, because I never really did any theory, and I'm self-taught. And I think sometimes I feel like a fraud, because I don't have the musical language to describe what I want. People go in and they talk about all these different kind of triads and tones and all this theoretical language, which I just don't have. So it was all very new, but also very exciting, because it was the first time I'd been able to flesh out these ideas myself.
And to hear other musicians making their contribution.
Yeah, because it'd always just been me in my bedroom. So suddenly to have a full sound was really exciting. It was like a playground. It was really good fun. Whew.
Now, I wonder if we, as we reach towards the top of the hill, head for that bench.
Yes.
We could hear the stripped back sound
yeah.
of you and the guitar. Would that be okay?
Yeah, once I've had a little breather.
yeah, before you start singing.
Yeah. So this, see like the skeleton of the old, there's an old tree here in the bushes. That used to be a huge tree that had been felled and it sprawled across all of this bit. It was a climbing frame for years and years and years. And it was always here, and we always climbed it. And then when I was a teenager, like I said, this is always where we used to come out and hang out. And then one day it got cut down. It was really sad. And that was what Indigo was kind of inspired by.
You were raised in a forest, it grew straight and tall. As you weaved through the trunks, you felt desperately small. And taller you grew, the taller the trees, and you'd run home all muddy and graze both your knees. And there in the middle stood a tall slender beech. If you raised both your arms, you found you could reach the base of her branches, and upwards you swung. In the forest she whispered as all her leaves sang. Do you? In those indigo eyes there's a child that hides, and the stars they call out to their runaway bride. Troubles are old for a body so young. You are the first and the last to climb up the tree. You slept in her branches, you whispered that she'd been there from the first. She'd be there till the end, and we'd weave her your stories of myths and pretend. And there in the night came a mighty great storm. Her arms were outstretched as her body was torn. You cried when you found her and after you fled, but nothing could silence the voice in your head. Oh,
absolutely beautiful. And to hear it sung here, have you sung it here before?
I don't think I have, you know.
Under the shadow of the tree that it's about.
That's nice.
With an accompaniment from a magpie.
Yes, yeah, yeah, it's little birds twittering away.
No, but it's not a magpie on the album, it's a blackbird, isn't
blackbird,
it?
So
you use the sound of a blackbird and blend it into the music. Why did you do that?
I got it at the beginning and the end of the album because I love the song of the blackbird. And for me, because so many of those songs I wrote when I was young and they're kind of rooted in childhood, and I think that's a theme throughout the album, really, is that kind of growing up, I suppose. But when I was little and going to bed, the blackbird was always, they always seemed to be the last bird to be singing in the evening, and he always seemed to be singing loudest in the morning. So I was always going to sleep to the sound of the blackbird and waking up to the sound of the blackbird. So whenever I hear a blackbird now, I just I just feel like I'm six again and in my parents', you know, house listening to that. So it's just a really, really nostalgic sound for me.
It was wonderful. Well, let's walk on. come now to the very pretty village of Tamworth in Arden, which is not far from Alvechurch, and it's famous because this is where the singer and songwriter Nick Drake grew up and lived, and near here his life ended when he was just 26. And it's a very beautiful spot, isn't it, Catherine?
It's lovely.
Really lovely houses.
Feels like the sort of place, if I sold a few more albums, I'd quite like to end up one day, but we'll see.
And they still have Nick Drake gatherings here, don't they?
Yeah, once a year, people from all over the world actually travel to Tamworth and Arden, and they travel here and sing his songs for a couple of days.
In the village hall, just across the road here?
Yes, in the village hall and in the church.
Which is where he's buried?
Yes, yeah. So people gather and they sing their own songs inspired by Nick Drake, and they sing some of his ones as well.
And how did you first come into contact with his music? Did your mum and dad have albums?
Yeah, yes. My parents are big fans. And when I first got a little MP3 player, I put a lot of my dad's CDs onto it. And I remember listening to Five Leaves Left just on repeat. It was one of the first times I'd really just listened to an album just back to back again and again and again. I just loved it. The lyrics, the melodies, it's just really, really beautiful, beautiful album.
And did the fact that he came from here also strike a chord with you?
I think so. I mean, he's often a name that's mentioned by people. I suppose people are very proud to have Nick Drake from around here. So I think he's always been a name that I'd heard growing up. And it's nice, particularly when you get into music yourself, to know that that's sort of, I guess, the heritage of the area, those sorts of musicians, so it's cool.
And I wonder if you identify with him as somebody who writes very poetic and very personal lyrics.
Yeah, I mean, his lyrics are stunning. They were definitely a great source of inspiration for me. It's hard not to listen to Nick Drake's music and look at it through the lens of his ending. And I think that sometimes his songs can all sound very sad and very haunted and very tragic. But actually, I don't think his songs are that. I think there's a lot of them are just about him being quite peaceful and quite reclusive. And I think it's important to try and listen to his songs through that lens as well.
And during lockdown, you and John Wilkes got together with some other musicians and
we did. And
put some Nick Drake songs online, didn't you?
Yeah. So John got in touch with me. I think once we'd all kind of realised that lockdown wasn't going to lift anytime soon, and obviously we'd all lost a lot of work, John got in touch with me and with Lucas Drinkwater and John Nice, because he knows that we're all fans of Nick Drake. And it was the first time really that, because lockdown had kind of meant that we were all just sat around with very little to do, it's the first time we actually had a chance to really make a lot of music together. So we just thought it'd be fun to do a Nick Drake song and put it out there. I think Mark Radcliffe played it on Radio 2, and yeah, everyone seemed to really like it. So we did do a couple more, and I think they're all on Spotify now.
But so, you've had another chance to cover a Nick Drake song in a really major project that's going on at the moment, an album that's about to come out. Tell us about that project and the album.
Yeah, so it's going to be called The Endless Coloured Ways, and it is a collection of Nick Drake's songs done by lots and lots of different artists. Yeah, this is it.
So we're just stopping there for a moment outside the house where Nick Drake lived and his family lived as well. And there's a blue plaque up on the side of the house. Mm-hmm. Beautiful house.
It's a lovely big house.
And big gates. Don't want to intrude too much.
No, it's still lived in now. I remember it was on sale not that long ago. So all the Nick Drake fans are enjoying having a little look around online.
And do people make pilgrimages to come here, do you?
Yeah, well, like I said, for the Nick Drake gathering, everyone comes here once a year, and I think people kind of probably do come and have a little hang around outside the gates, but I always feel a little bit bad just because I know there's people still just living their own lives in there. But it's hard not to want to come, and if you're a big fan of his music, it's hard not to want to come and have a little look.
And I think if we walk back into the centre of the village, we'll have a chance to visit his grave.
Yeah.
So let's do that while you tell us a little bit more about this
album. It's called The Endless Coloured Ways, released on Chrysalis Records. And it's been put together by Jeremy of Chrysalis and Callie, who looks after the Nick Drake estate now, along with Nick's sister. And the whole brief that we got given as artists was to take a Nick Drake song and completely, you know, dismantle it, look at it in a completely different way, do whatever we want with it, make it entirely our own, to have no real loyalty to the original, I suppose. And that was a really exciting process, because a lot of Nick Drake's music, there's a lot of fans who are, he's one of those kind of idolised musicians, and rightly so. And I think sometimes when that happens, people aren't a bit afraid of covering it because it almost feels untouchable. So it was really fun to be given permission to kind of just go ahead and do whatever we wanted with the songs. And
there's some extraordinary names on this album, aren't there? Who else is doing it?
Fontaine's DC, Guy Garvey, Bombay Bicycle Club, Aldous Harding, Feist, David Gray,
Emily Sandé, and also Kareem Polwart and Chris Drever have got together to do a song as well.
So
did you feel nervous about it?
A little bit, but to be honest, I think it was just fun. I just wanted to have a go because I didn't know at the time who else they'd have involved. And I just thought it was going to be really good fun. And it was. It was nice to actually just take a song. It was Callie suggested this one for me because I've done, I think, They're Leaving Me Behind. And it's one of his oldest ones. And the original recording is so stripped back and so lo-fi. It just felt a bit like a blank canvas, really. So it was really nice to have that and to be able to just do what I wanted with it. And I did. So I'm a little bit nervous about what the response will be, but I'm really proud of it.
And in case anybody thinks we've got some coconut shells, that was actually
that
a horse going past.
Yeah, that was a horse.
Would you sing it for us?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
The tramp moves on to the end of the street. I listen to the echo of his hobnailed feet. For some, there's a future to find, but I think they're leaving me behind. Hurries on at its breakneck pace, and people fly by in a lifelong race. For them, there's a future to find. But I think they're leaving me behind. Mm-hmm. The chances they come, but the chances I've been success can be gained, but at a great cost. For some, there's a future to find, but I think
So were you nervous about some fans saying, well, you mustn't touch this music because it's, you know, it's sacrosanct?
A little bit, because I know he's one of those people that people do feel very protective over, and rightly so. His music's very special to a lot of people. And because he uses all these different tunings on his guitar, I think there's a lot of people who are obsessed with learning his songs exactly how he plays them. And that's, you know, that's completely valid, and that's totally fine. I think for me, I prefer to either listen to the original, and if I'm going to listen to a cover, I want to hear something completely different, because I find that interesting, and I think that's a nice way to do it. But equally, there will be people who don't want to hear Nick Drake songs covered, and that's fine. But it'd be nice to think that it could bring in some new fans for Nick's music, because fans of Fontaine's DC, for example, who might not have heard Nick Drake's music, might now come to it and appreciate his songwriting. And I think it's a good thing for the longevity of his music. And I'd like to think, if it was me, I'd love to think that my music was going and being played by all these people, and
many generations later as well.
Yeah, and his music's inspiring.
Have you heard what the other people have done with their songs?
No, not yet. I'm waiting for mine, because my song is going to be released on a little single with a track from Guy Garvey and Mike Lindsay of Tongue, and he was Lump with Laura Marling as well. And so I'm waiting. I think they're posting me one so I can hear it, but I haven't actually heard anyone's yet. They've been really, really secretive about it, so I only know mine, so I'm really looking forward to hearing the others now.
And why do you think his music continues to speak to us so powerfully?
I mean, I think the lyrics, again, I always seem to come back to lyrics, but there's something so personal about them, and so raw and so honest, and I think that will always appeal to people. I guess there is also the fact that I think dying at a young age creates this kind of mystery, and there's that, maybe he'll never grow older, and I don't know, sometimes he'll always just be that young man making these amazing songs, and there's that always that feeling of what could he have gone on to do, and I think that appeals to people sometimes, because he's just this perfect little moment. I don't know, sometimes you get these artists who maybe should have stopped earlier on, and you think, oh, so Rose and Nick Drake will never have that. He'll always just be this perfect kind of moment in time.
And he did create three really amazing albums.
Exactly, yeah. So, but I think, you know, his music's just raw and beautiful, and at the end of the day, I think that stands the test of time. So.
And the quality of his voice is unique as well, isn't it?
I know, very recognisable. And I like the older recordings. I saw someone on Facebook saying instead of a covers album, they were wondering if they could just get some like remastered copies of the old stuff, so, you know, for it to sound cleaner and things. But actually, I really like the old recordings. It's got character, and it's just that was that for that time. And I think what we're doing now is something for this time, and that's a good thing.
Of course. And you're also going to sing another Nick Drake song for us, I think, Cello Song. Why did you choose that?
It's just one of my favourite Nick Drake songs. I taught it to myself when I was a bit younger, and it's just always been... I think that one's from Five Leaves Left. I've just listened to it again and again when I was younger, so when I taught myself guitar and wanted to make sure I could play that song. So.
And we're coming towards the church now.
Yes.
Which is just opposite the Bell pub. And it's just so beautifully kept, this village, isn't it?
It's really, really nice.
The nicely mown lawn, and the snowdrops are out.
Yeah.
And there's some
on the way.
Ivy-covered walls on the right here.
Yeah. Should I take you to the grave first?
That would be lovely to see that, yes.
Yeah, so if we go around this way, through the grave.
There's a gate here.
Yeah.
And you can actually hear a fountain playing in the garden just opposite the church here.
Lovely house. Goodness.
Glorious Georgian house opposite.
Stunning.
Covered in ivy and with the beautiful proportions.
Yeah.
So it's actually a really lovely time of year in this graveyard, because the daffodils are out,
mm-hmm.
and the crocuses are out. There's purple of crocuses and daffodils spotting all over the place. Row upon row of gravestones, and there's the church bell.
And this is his family plot here, I believe.
So family
grave here. Yeah, Nick Drake, Rodney Drake, and Molly Drake.
And
I think on the back it has a really nice inscription.
Just on the back of his headstone it says, "Now we rise and we are everywhere."
Which is a lovely line from one of his songs, which I think is such a nice thing to have on there.
It's a very modest headstone, isn't it?
Quite very
a small
modest
one. But underneath a huge tree here, beech tree, I think. And it says, "The Drake's family grave is private property. Please do not place any adornments apart from small floral tributes and messages on or near the grave space. Thank you." And people have placed plants and flowers, just small tributes, and the crocuses, purple crocuses, growing around the headstone.
Around it. It's lovely, isn't it?
Yes. Ooh. What a wonderful spot to... Yes, it is moving, isn't it?
Yeah. But I like that people can visit here, and I think it's quite nice that it's not a huge thing. It's just there. Yeah, little pilgrimage.
I wonder if we might sit on that bench over there and sing a song.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Should we do that? Catherine, to hear you sing that sitting right here by Nick's grave.
Special to sing it by Nick's grave, to be honest.
Do you feel quite emotional?
Yeah, particularly as it mentions graves and springing, and it all feels very pertinent. So, yeah.
Thank you very much for singing it for us.
You're very welcome.
Just tell us what's coming next for you, apart from this album of Nick Drake covers.
Yeah.
Have you got a second album about to come out?
Possibly, yeah. So this single comes out as a little limited edition vinyl single and on digital on the 12th of April. And then I think the full LP comes out. And then for me, I'm currently in the recording process. So there will be more music, but I can't say for sure when that will be yet. Yeah, mainly focusing on recording at the moment, some festivals this summer, and then we'll see what happens.
We'll look forward to all of that. It's been amazing to hear you sing in such beautiful surroundings and to hear your stories. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on Folk on Foot.
Anytime you fancy a walk, let me know.
I'll definitely take you up on that.
Cheers, thank you.
We rely entirely on support from our listeners to keep Folk on Foot going. So if you've enjoyed this episode, why not buy us a coffee? Just go to folkonfoot.com/support us. While you're there, you can also sign up as a patron. You'll get great rewards, including exclusive access to films and loads of the songs we've heard on our travels around the UK and Ireland, and the chance to be in the audience of just 10 people at a front room gig live on Zoom. Plus, there's the satisfaction of knowing that every penny you give will go back into making more episodes of Folk on Foot. So just go to folkonfoot.com/support us. The link is in the show notes. Also, please make sure that more people can find us by spreading the word on social media, subscribing or following us on your podcast app, and rating and reviewing us wherever you can. Thank you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.